The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition, the last in a 46-part series on managing assets, at least at Jim Saulnier and Associates. Seems like 46. I think it's actually only
six,
but
this is
it's
seven.
Starting to feel a little bit like
it is. It's getting too old. Yeah,
it's getting a little long. So we promise everyone this is the last one for a while, but we didn't get to all the questions last week that people had been sending us about the five-part series or so that we put together to describe our philosophy, how we manage assets here. We work with a lot of do-it-yourselfers, but a lot of those listening out there who are of the do-it-yourself crowd have been interested over the years how exactly we do it. How do we do things? So we kind of laid that all out there over the past few weeks. And today we've got the last batch of questions that were sent in to clarify a few things that we mentioned in that series. But next week we'll be off onto something completely new in the EDU show. So I did want to mention that in case you're getting tired of the asset management discussion.
I wouldn't say this is going to be this is the last of them. We have 14 questions, and there's no way we're going to get to them today.
True.
So if your question, and it was on investment management, isn't answered on this show, it's going to be put into the regular rotation, which means it'll probably be 4 months from now before we get to it, because I'm still, where am I? I'm in November now, I think. I think we're finishing up November. We just entered November of the questions on the regular Q&A show. So I appreciate all the questions. It was really good. And I do want to just, in my opinion, it wasn't a show. We haven't been doing a series of shows on our process. I'm trying to give, because most of our listeners, Chris, are do-it-yourselfers, and they want nothing to do with people managing their assets anyways. But we do feel, Chris and I, strongly that eventually everyone is going to have to consider getting some help, whether that help may be a different family member or that help is someone you actually go out and hire. And part of the reason that I wanted to go over how we do things, but more importantly, why. That's the one thing you may say whatever you want about Chris and I and our process and our show even. But knowing Chris, I don't think would ever dispute we don't freely share why we do things and how we do things. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just concentrate on the how. I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. But they never explain why. Why do they believe in doing things this way? And that is what I wanted to relay. And it kind of ties into the very first question we're going to get to, which was a direct result of last week's Q&A. And we got three questions from that last week, and the rest were from the previous week, Chris. But I hope people found it beneficial, maybe to help you as you contemplate how you're going to manage your own assets. Are you going to be passive? Are you going to be active? Are you going to be a passive-active or an active-passive and all that stuff that we reviewed? Or if you're going to be interviewing other advisors to help you manage assets, maybe this will give you some thoughts to not just blindly fall into the X% of AUM, Maybe ask them, why are you charging this much? Why don't you cap it? And here's the best one of all. Will you provide me a very clearly well-defined itemization of what that X percent AUM fee provided me? In other words, a lot of advisors do roll, and I think you'll agree with this, Chris, financial planning with investment management into just an AUM fee.
Absolutely.
And we have nothing against that. What we have a problem with is the lack of clarity on what exactly you're paying for. How much of that fee went into the actual asset management, and what did they do for that? How much is going into the financial planning, and what are they doing for that? That's what I mean. Ask them for a breakdown. If you are getting all these different services, financial planning, retirement planning, maybe a little bit of taxes, who knows, maybe some investment management, some rebalancing, just ask them, can you just kind of, hey, let's say you had $1.5 million and you're paying 1%. You just paid $15,000 to this company or person. Just ask them to break it out. It amazes me, Chris. I think if people took their car to the mechanic and, you know, they went back to pick it up and the mechanic handed them a bill for $1,800 and it was just, you know, you owe me $1,800 and it wasn't broken out on how they got to that. Mm-hmm. I think most people would ask them, can you explain to me how this came to $1,800, please?
Yeah.
Yet someone freely, we've seen it. We've seen it. I've been doing this 23 years, folks. I've seen people come in here, and when we do a retirement plan for them, you have to get statements, Chris. And you see on the statements the fees coming out, whether it's monthly, quarterly, or if it's an annual statement, you see the annual number. And we've seen 10, 12, 15, 20 plus $1,000, folks, coming out for management services. But when we ask clients, what did they get for it? What's the overriding answer?
Not sure. Not quite sure.
I don't know. Right. Because they don't have a itemized bill. That's what we have a problem with. So I'm hoping that people get this in their minds to start talking. Maybe slowly we can change the industry. Perhaps they do give bills. The SEC mandates it, and every state that at least we know of, because we're registered in many states, their securities departments require not an itemized bill, Chris, just an invoice indicating what is owed that billing period. But they don't ask for it to be itemized. They just say, you know, show your clients what they owe that period. And, Chris, the math calculation on how you came up with it, because it all comes to them, to AUM. Right. So they want you to show what was the average account balance that you used to come up with the billing, what is the billing percentage amount, and what is the total amount due. But they don't mandate itemization. And that just always rubbed me the wrong way. And I just wanted my practice to be a little different. Mm-hmm. So that's why I did the series of shows, folks. And we've been doing this podcast for over a decade, between the radio show, probably over 13, 14 years. And this is the first time we have ever talked about how we manage assets. I never wanted this to be a stock jock show. And I'm going out of my way not to talk about specific investments. But I thought it's long enough. I've got to start getting our listeners, if you're going to be hiring someone, to think of these unique questions to ask. Right. Which leads to this, which I thought was a really good question. Mm-hmm. And it begins, "Hi, Jim and Chris. I'm a relatively new listener, but I have learned a lot. As a do-it-yourselfer," you put a D-Y-D-I-Y-er, I think it means do-it-yourselfer, right? Yep. "As a DIYer with my investments, I had one thought running in my head after listening to your last EDU, which was essentially a Q&A on your investment process." Like all the acronyms he's been using here. And he asked a simple question. Mm-hmm. "How can you call what you do passive investing if you are actively deciding to get out of fixed income for some of your clients?" And I think what he's referencing is how we mentioned, was it the last show or the show before? I think it was the last show.
I think it was the last show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we had that, no, wait a minute. It wasn't the last show. Wasn't it the, I can't remember.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, I think it might have been the regular. I think he confused the regular Q&A show with the last show. Remember, the only thing I can think of is he was talking about how I mentioned for some of our clients. It was the regular Q&A show of last week, not the EDU Q. So he made a mistake. And we had that email question from someone who had a book on annuities. That's what I'm thinking it was.
Get at the end of this, we answered a question about somebody using an alternative to bonds for the fixed income portion of their portfolio.
Right. He messed up. That listener was not on the EDU Q&A. It was the regular Q&A.
I don't know if that's true, but either way, it doesn't
matter. Maybe I'm messing up. Well, who cares what show it was on? What his point was, and we did mention on that show, because the question from the listener was, hey, I've got this book. This book recommends that if you have a 60-40 portfolio, 40% being fixed income, 60% being equities, because bonds are due to fall, at least principal-wise, fall in value as interest rates go up, you might be getting more in interest, but the value of your bonds are going to drop. If you have an ETF, the value of that is going to drop, or a mutual fund, that is going to drop. Fact of the matter is, the value of bonds will drop, existing bonds will drop as new interest rates go up. And the question was, do you believe in what this book was espousing? And we answered it, and I gave my opinion on it. But I had mentioned that for our clients in a conservative and moderately conservative portfolio, we were giving those clients that very opportunity to view their bonds, because you got to understand, folks, for those clients, it's representing 70 to 80% of their portfolio is in fixed income. Mm-hmm. And they tend to be, Chris, very conservative investors. They don't want to see volatility. They don't want to see loss. And for a long time, bonds have been delivering that because interest rates have been going down, with a couple of blurbs here and there where it would go up for a few months. But for the most part, they were going down. We don't offer it, as the author of the book was saying, yet to our clients in the 60-40 moderate portfolios. I don't think I would ever offer it to moderately aggressive or aggressive. They can handle that type of volatility. And in an aggressive portfolio, they only have about 10% in fixed income anyways. So we concentrate and offer that, folks, on our conservative and moderately conservative clients to put some of their fixed income holdings in MYGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities. That was the point. He's saying, how can you say what you're doing is passive if you are doing this? And here's how I can say that and defend it, listener. I am not advocating to my clients, gee, you're in fixed income. I think we should get out of it because it's going to go down. And I want to put you in gold because in high inflationary periods, gold or precious metals will do well. Or commodities. Gee, have you seen commodities lately? We're going to get you in commodities because commodities are going to do well and give you the diversification. That to me would be market timing.
This is a total hypothetical conversation that would never happen, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. No. Yeah. I would never do that. But what I'm doing, and this listener, and maybe all listeners missed the boat for the trees.
They know what you mean.
Thank you. Missed the boat for the ride. You missed the forest with the trees. Did I get that right?
Sure.
Thank you. When I put fixed income holdings, when I take fixed income ETFs and put them in a multi-year guaranteed annuity, I haven't taken them out of fixed income. I just put them in a different type of fixed income. They're in a fixed income holding that is not going to drop in value when interest rates rise. That, to me, is not market timing. It's saying, wait a minute, 40% of your portfolio is in fixed income. There is a fixed income type product, not exact fixed income, won't have the diversification of the 40% in fixed income, which right now has long-term U.S. government debt, intermediate government debt, intermediate corporate, emerging market, ultra short and short-term bond. We have it well diversified, I admit that. But it is in a fixed income holding, Chris, that will drop in value if interest rates rise. So I talk to the clients about that. I get their feelings from it. And I tell them, I don't want to get you out of the 60% I keep going to the 60-40. I'm talking to clients with 70 to 80% in fixed income. And I tell those clients, I don't want to take the 70, 80% you have in fixed income out of that. I'm not advocating we go into cash. I'm not advocating you go into some alternative asset that's quote unquote designed to do something that the equity markets aren't. I'm putting you in a different type of fixed income holding, at least in my mind and in my appreciation of it. And I spoke at length to Travis, the chartered financial analyst who I hired to counsel with me on this. And he admitted he's not very knowledgeable in annuities, but when I explained it all to him and how MIGAs worked, he agreed. He said, you're essentially keep, they are, it's a fixed income. It's a guaranteed interest rate for a fixed number of years. It's no different than a bond. You buy a bond for a set number of years and earn a fixed earnings from that bond. I'm just putting them in fixed income, Chris, that isn't going to have the principal fluctuations during this rising interest rate environment. And I'm offering it, not moving it. We have discretion on our client accounts. I do not do this with discretion. I talk to every single client that I offer this to. And again, right now, it's only the conservative, moderately conservative. And I ask them, would you like it? I explain it to them and let them decide. But I don't think it's truly abandoning a passive investor. Yes, I'm being a little bit active in the sense I'm looking at the fixed income and I am diverging from my adherence to modeling the Morningstar target risk portfolios. I admit that. But I still think because I'm holding passive, I'm not quite crossing that road to active. At least that's my opinion. Many may disagree, but that's why I do it.
Yeah, and I'd say there's room for some gray area in the middle where there's this whole passive versus active definition. But you know, when you make one individual decision like that, does that throw you into the active category? I'd say you're still predominantly passive. And active is really, most people would interpret that as you're doing in-depth analysis on individual investments trying to, quote, beat the market. That's what active investing is, kind of fundamentally the description. You know, this, you could argue that Jim, in this offering this to clients who fall into this particular category, giving them the option of making this decision if they prefer it, is a way of, you know, beating, but I hate to use the word beating there because you're moving into just an alternatively managed bond portfolio with the insurance company acting as the ultimate, the investor into the fixed income with some hedging strategies on their end that then allow them to pass on this promise to you of a certain rate for a given period of time without the downside principal reduction or principal drop threat that a typical bond portfolio might have. So it is a shift. And is it, you know, I guess you could argue, yes, he's looking into the future, seeing, making the prediction that interest rates are going up. I don't think it's a tough prediction at this point, since that's, you know, the Fed has just announced that's what they're going to do. And then realizing what would happen to a bond portfolio and then telling people ahead of time, this is what we're probably going to see. Are you okay with that? Or do you want something a little different?
Right.
So I agree with Jim that doesn't throw, you know, the baby out with the bathwater, that this now becomes we're active investments, as far as our approach goes.
Right. And I love the way you put that because I didn't think of it that way. But Chris is 100% right, folks. When we purchase a MIGA for our client, or the client authorizes us to put some of their fixed income money in a MIGA, it's essentially going to another asset manager. Right. This manager is the insurance company.
Right.
And it goes into what is called their general account. And the vast majority of that general account is managed by their quote-unquote bond desk,
yep.
Which is literally a bunch of guys and gals sitting around a desk managing a bond portfolio. So they call it the bond desk. And it's just being managed differently. I'm taking it out of an ETF that might be managed by Vanguard or iShares or whoever, or BlackRock or whoever, and I'm giving it to XYZ Insurance Company instead. The insurance company can do one thing that the investment companies can't do. They can insure the principal. So they're going to say, look, you give us your bond money, we're going to give you a fixed rate of interest for a number of years. If we earn more, we get to keep it. If things blow up, you won't lose it, and your principal is guaranteed. It's the only difference. They can put that layer of insurance on, yes, through the hedging strategies Chris briefly mentioned, but also because of the structure of the firm. Mm-hmm. They're an insurance company. They're going to pool it with millions of other people and risk pool it, and that's what they do. It's insurance. So anyways, that's a very good point, Chris. It really, that if you tracked the dollars, they're still right back in bonds. Yep. They're just in bonds in insurance company portfolio instead of Vanguard's portfolio. So excellent point you mentioned. Mm-hmm. All right. We have a question on more of the pie, or more importantly, where is the pie? And you'll see in a minute what I mean. So it says, greetings, Chris, Bob, Greg, and everyone else. So a shout out to all the people. And me. Greetings, Jim, Chris, Bob,
I was
going to
say, he left off you.
No, he did. He led with me.
Okay.
But as well he should. Greetings, Jim, Chris,
yeah,
Bob,
for now,
Greg.
Your name is still on the company, right?
Yes. And everyone else at the firm. I just finished listening to your podcast on positioning, so mm-hmm. he had a lot of time on his hands. As I was eagerly awaiting for it, since you have briefly mentioned it on previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. Did we? We must have led up to it. Okay. And now finally dedicated entire shows to it. I get why you want to have different pools of money invested in the proper investments depending on the goal time of that money. Exactly, folks. Mm-hmm. Positioning is nothing more than asset liability mapping. We've talked about that in the past. My question is in regards to your statement of not having one large portfolio, but one broken up to a bunch of mini portfolios. Can you expound on this, or let Chris, since you are so pithy? I think he was giving me a dig there.
Maybe a little.
He threw
that one to you, huh?
I can get this. Similarly, right?
Close.
Thank you. To many investors in their 50s who have 90% or more in an always taxable IRA. I don't know if all investors in their 50s, listener, have 90% of the money in always taxable, but I will say a lot of people, not just in their 50s, we see it in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, having 80, 90, even 95%+ and always taxable. So he is right there. Would you break this up into multiple IRAs or simply portion out each amount into each position timeline within one IRA? P.S. I would have thought your pie analogy would have been Boston cream pie, considering your background.
Good
A
point,
very,
yeah.
very good tasting pie back in my pie eating days. But no, I use cherry pie. I have no idea why, but it's cherry pie. And in Chris's eyes, it's apple pie, but it is what it is. We use at our firm, listener, one big IRA, because when people hire us, we call our asset management service convenience portfolios for a reason. We acknowledge you could do this yourself. It's not rocket science. It truly isn't. It takes a lot of work, but it's not rocket science. And a lot of you do-it-yourselfers, you could do it yourself. We have more advanced trading software than I would say any people listening, short of other financial advisors who are listening. So that software allows us to create sleeves, which is what the trading software calls it. I call it pie slices on the podcast. So we can create each quote-unquote sleeve within the IRA. We can assign assets to it. We can track them. We can follow their performance. We have a detailed Excel spreadsheet. All you engineers listening, you probably perked up on that one. So we have an Excel spreadsheet that we created that allows us to track each slice. So it's easy for the client, Chris, we feel, to get one statement from one IRA rather than having three, four, five IRAs all with moving parts. And listener, you are constantly going to be moving dollars from each position slice. It's going to happen. Things in your life are going to happen that you can't possibly conceive, even over a short one-year period. And we may have to take money from one slice or one position, move it to another. The slice or position that gets manipulated the most? The fun money slice. Because fun money is money earmarked for discretionary expenses because it wasn't needed for minimum dignity floor needs, food, utilities, transportation, housing, and health care, guaranteed inheritance, aging assistance if something happened to you medically, who's going to take care of you, or a reserve or buffer. If any of those, Chris, change, and by your, except for the reserve, those other ones can change on a regular basis, sometimes quite significantly, we may have to funnel money out of your fund number because it's the only money that's left unless you're one of the people who have a lot of money, a well-funded retirement, put it that way, where they have some quote-unquote unpositioned assets. Then it's just kind of a reserve to their reserve, if you will. But we have to constantly be monitoring all of these moving elements and getting feedback and data from Chris and from Bob on the tax side as they relay it to us on the investment side. And we may have to change some of those positions around. It's much easier, Chris, to do it if you have I'm just picking this money, this number out of thin air, folks. If you had a $2 million IRA, why would you want to break it into five smaller IRAs? And then to get money from one positioned IRA to another position, I have to do an internal journal, if you will, amongst the custodian that I'm holding the money at. If I'm the one managing the money, and if we're doing positioning, we are, it's much easier to have it within one account where we can easily reallocate it with our trading software and keep track of it in the quote-unquote sleeve within our portfolio management software.
Yeah, it's really just a kind of a formal way of earmarking the different pieces of the portfolio for their different intended purposes. Makes it a lot easier to review with people too, because you can point to it and say, remember, this is set aside for maybe some long-term care needs if you ever face them. So this is still sitting here. This is what it did last year, etc. Oh, this piece over here, remember, that's that piece you're going to start spending in your fun go-go period here in the next, you know, about 3 years from now. So see, here it is. This is why we've got it positioned this way, and it's ready to go when you want to spend from it. Without this, you know, these capabilities in software makes it real. This is the hardest part, I think, for a do-it-yourselfer to replicate, is that they, to clearly do it, either going to have a really involved spreadsheet that tries to keep track of all this stuff, or they're going to physically break it up into separate accounts, which, just, you know, you mentioned the downside of that is if you need to shift between those, it's a little bit more pain than if it's all in one portfolio slash account. So we have the ability to kind of x-ray it, if you will, and show you the different pieces that are going on in there without physically breaking it into all those separate pieces.
Exactly. Okay. I think that answered that question for him. I'm trying to see. All right. This one's a fairly straightforward one. It's a female George. We'll call her Georgette. Doesn't say where she's from. The other one, did he say where he's from? North Carolina, by the way, the other one that you just answered. Gives his real name, but we'll call him George. And the one before that does not give a state at all. So we got North Carolina, and who knows? This one doesn't give her state. Says, hi, Jim and Chris. I really enjoyed your recent episodes about why and how you do planning and manage assets. Just wondering, how do you handle brokerage accounts where selling would create huge capital gains to go into your positions? Thank you for all the valuable information and laughs. I guess she's talking about you there. She signs her name, but we'll call her Georgette. When we receive, or at least if we're going to be managing someone's assets, again, we call it convenience portfolio, so they don't want to do it themselves. They like our approach. If the money is in an IRA, this person is right. This Georgette is correct. It's very easy to get out of IRA assets. The first thing we always do, though, Chris, is ask people, are there any legacy assets here you absolutely do not want to part with? Some people may have purchased something from a company they used to work at. Some people have inherited assets, not necessarily in an IRA, but in other accounts. And for one reason or another, they don't want us to take them out of those assets.
Or a lot of people have pointed to some of those assets and said, you know, this, I'm really crossing my fingers that the step up in basis will be around when my kids get this. So I just want to keep holding this little piece. and give it to them. I'm not planning to spend it myself, so can you just leave it off to the side?
Correct. In a brokerage account, Chris means on that, right. Not in a regular IRA.
Right.
Other than that, so we would put, with our trading software, we put what is called a trade restrictions. We identify those assets, and we would not be able to sell them. Our software will not allow us to sell them. We put a trade restriction on them so no mistakes can be made in order to sell them. It's like kind of trying to launch a nuclear weapon. You got to press your finger on one thing, press another thing,
right.
and make sure, hey, you know what you're doing here, because you got this restriction on these things. So all the other assets is what she's asking about. What are you going to do about that? Inside an IRA, very straightforward, very easy. She's asking about a brokerage account. What are you going to do? Well, what we do is nothing. In the sense, we move brokerage assets in kind. We get them over to us, and that gives us the cost basis info. We generally recommend our clients contact the brokerage firm either in person or, you know, over the phone or online, and download a very detailed unrealized gain and losses before transferring. But since 2012, all that information has to be shared and tracked. So it gives us a lot of the basis information, the individual lot information, Chris. And we can start looking, we can start bringing Bob into the mix. Hopefully we're doing the people's plan and they have a retirement analysis with us, or they're in the process of getting that analysis. Hopefully their tax person is very receptive to working with us, or they consider utilizing Bob and our firm, because we have to take taxes into consideration when it comes to brokerage assets. We also, in the case of IRA and Roth accounts, believe it or not, folks, also we have to take taxes into consideration, because we have to look at the positioned dollars that are designed to be spent right away. How much are we going to need every year, at least for the foreseeable number of years, 3, 5, 8 years into the future? What are we going to need? Because some of those assets, Chris, that we need to spend, we may look and see, oh goodness, if we take X amount of dollars out, they're no longer going to be qualified for ACA premium tax credits. Or if we take out more than $70,000 of additional monies, they're going to get pushed to the next IRMA bracket. So we may have to actually put some quote-unquote cash-like positions, Chris, in a Roth or in the IRA or the brokerage. So we're going to be looking at all of this, listener. But when it comes to a brokerage account, we're going to first have to look at what is it going to cost tax-wise to get people out of their existing investments, especially the ones that they have no affinity to. They didn't ask us to put a trade restriction on. And then we have to work with your tax person, or if you're bringing it over to us, we'll work with Bob, and we'll start trying to put a plan in place, Chris. When is an appropriate time to sell these assets? If you've done a retirement plan with us, I'm going to pull Chris into the mix. And I'm going to say, okay, Chris, what are we going to need at minimum for their minimum dignity floor? Mm-hmm. What do you think? What does the analysis show, Chris? We're going to have to be distributing from these accounts until the minimum dignity floor is fully covered with secure income. For most people, that's going to be after Social Security begins. So there's going to be that period of time that Chris has coined the delay period, where we will work closely with him trying to get the information. Then we talk to Bob and we say, okay, Bob, we need $50,000 this year and it looks like $30,000 next year. I got to get $80,000 out of here over the next 2 years. What's the best way to do that? Should we pull it all into this year? Are they going to have a big income next year for maybe a deferred income payout or something? Should we delay it all until next year? Does it all have to come from a Roth because it's going to push them to lose ACA? Can you see, listeners, how there's a lot of moving parts here? So once we can start outlining that and figuring out how this spending plan, which is what positioning is, it's lining up your dollars to be spent, asset liability mapping. When we get a better idea of that, then we'll look at the brokerage assets, Chris. Are there any? If we'll work with the CPA, whether it's Bob or the other one, maybe they're in a low bracket or will be in a year or two when income stops or something. I'm making this all up on the fly, but maybe there's going to be an ideal time to realize cap gains, maybe not quite yet. And for the first couple of years, maybe we do want to take the money from the IRA or not. or the Roth account or not. So there's a lot of moving parts here. We don't just willy-nilly sell and move you all into our portfolio. And also, folks, if we've done positioning, if there's a position for a guaranteed inheritance, the best assets to leave for that are Roth or brokerage. But as the previous listener said, most people have 80-90+% of their money in IRAs. That's not a very good inheritance to leave to someone. If you have some brokerage assets and they treated you very well, maybe there's some equities in there from companies you used to work for, or you just bought, luckily, a great company years ago and you love it, who are we to tell you you got to get rid of it because it doesn't fit in one of our models? We would match that, Chris, on a positioning plan to the guaranteed inheritance.
Right.
Why? If it's going to grow and generate cap gains, good. We're not getting, hopefully, a lot of dividends from it. But, I mean, some companies do pay dividends. But the idea is to leave that as the guaranteed inheritance because under current laws, you'll get the step-up in basis. So it could pass tax-free. So sometimes some of your assets in your brokerage account actually fall right into your positioning plan, depending on what they're in, and we'll continue to hold them. We had someone with a bunch of bonds. That fell perfectly into our delay period positioning plan. Why? They were all going to be called or maturing within the next 8 years. And when I felt very confident they were going to be called because they were all paying interest rates higher than current rates were at least two years ago, it's possible some of these bonds in the future, if interest rates keep rising a lot, won't get called because new bonds will be paying more and we'll have to adjust the cash flow that we think is coming from the portfolio. But we built those bonds into the cash flow the client's going to need, Chris, right within the positioning plan.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, anything you want to add on that?
No. Simple answer is all the tax ramifications of these what we call maybe taxable accounts have to be considered when you're deciding what to do with them. And we still look first at what job does this need to do, but oftentimes we find that it'll do certain jobs better than others because of the way they're just in the inherent tax profile that exists right now. In these, it's very different dealing with something that was created years ago, right? We didn't know what the needs were at this point. This happened. This is what the hand we've been dealt. So we just look around and try to find the most effective and efficient use of those dollars, those investments in this particular case. But we have to take into consideration the jobs that are out there for it to do, and then the tax ramifications of using it. And it's a balancing act, and that's what makes that part a little more complex than some other areas of retirement planning.
Perfect. This next one, very short, kind of the same thing, and more up your alley,
okay,
to an extent. And it's addressed to Jim et al.
Yeah.
So that's
we'll take that.
Kind of like the other one, who was Jim, right. Bob, Chris, everybody in there. Jim et al. Since you have a pause on retirement planning, but are still accepting asset management clients, how can you perform asset allocation and positioning on clients' portfolio without having their retirement plan in place? That's a very good question because
question.
We are asked that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
People like the concept of positioning when they hear it, but we have a pause right now. We're not accepting retirement planning clients until next year. My goal is somewhere within the first 6 months of next year. If Chris's goal is January 1st of next year, he's a little more optimistic than I am, but we'll see. But somewhere... Well,
we're definitely not open to new people in January because we already have...
Well, whatever,
people lined up for a while.
Right, but we may, quote-unquote...
Might start talking about it.
Talking about it and reopen in the sense people can come in, learn about us, get on our list and start.
Right.
It's going to be sometime next year, folks. Mm-hmm. We paused, as everybody knows, because we're retooling our firm and the direction, and I will do a series of shows on why. It is a mixture of 23, it'll be, by then it'll be 24 years of doing retirement planning, and also the experience I had because of my stroke, and not no because I almost died. It's what I experienced with the healthcare afterwards. And I shared that with you, Chris. Mm-hmm. And it's this was always a vision of mine, but it was something that I was going to try to do later because there's so much that Chris and I are working on. And I says, no, I'm going to do this now. I saw the true value of what I want to do. So we paused. It was the easiest way for us to do it. There's only so much of us to go around. I mean, I have to go home and take care of my God, and Chris has much more time than I do. He only works full-time at CSU, has six kids and a wife. He, I mean, you could probably work more.
I could take on four or five other major projects.
You don't know what it's like having to go home and water little seedlings growing under those grow lights.
Sounds very stressful.
It is. You got to remember to do it. It's the first thing. So it's my life is busy, folks. And Chris, he's hounding me to work more, but I'm like, chill. You've got all the time, not me. Okay, so how do we manage assets if we don't have the full picture? I would throw it at back, not that we do, but my question would be, my rhetorical question would be, who's managing money now and how are they doing it? But what we generally do, and I'm glad this person picked up on the importance. I often say, how can anyone tell you what to do with your money until they know what your money needs to do for you? That's not just a talking point or a bumper sticker. It truly does form the basis of how we prefer to manage assets. Now, in an accumulation portfolio, so all you folks in your 20s, 30s, 40s, even if you're working with an advisor, all you advisors who specialize with people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, you don't really need to do a financial plan for them. Now, For
retirement.
Right, for retirement. If they're retirement assets, it's just put them in the market. Just invest. You should be 100% equity. As I said, that if you're in your 20s. If you're not, I think you're foolish. And you should be looking at what's happening in the markets right now as a buying opportunity for your retirement dollars. Money that's going to go for a home down payment or your children's education, totally different. Work with your advisor, or if you do it yourself, crunch the numbers and work on investing those assets appropriately for the time frame to them. But when you are close to retirement or in retirement, yes, the picture differs. And we need to start looking forward. And we need those data numbers that Chris produces. So what we do initially, and we're doing this for several people right now, we ask them to provide us their best guess estimates of some fairly broad categories. In other words, we can give them a little idea of, here's something. We're gonna get this in focus for you when we get to your retirement plan. But for now, give us some of these broad numbers. And we can start taking those broad numbers and applying them to their portfolio and starting what we would call a pre-positioning. We're going to start to get it into what we think we need. The best analogy I can come up with on that, a lot of people know I'm a hunter and I used to be a police officer, so firearms, I'm very astute with them, used to shoot a lot. I would be on the target, not necessarily the bullseye. And that's what we're trying to do here. I'm not going to try to nail it. We'll get that from your team upstairs, Chris. But what we're trying to do on the investment side is get on the target so we can start broadly positioning the portfolio and then fine-tune it when we get the investment results. And that's why this is all part of a retirement plan. A retirement plan isn't the regurgitated PDF that you might get. We don't give PDFs. We give recordings. We do it over Zoom and record it instead of giving a PDF. But a lot of advisors give PDFs, and I'm sure a lot are doing them over Zoom now, like we are too, but you would get a recording. With many people, you might get a PDF. That's just the beginning of what a true retirement plan is. How the investment side and your spending and your needs and your health and all that change directly impacts each of your position portfolios and how much we're going to have in each position and how we're going to do your taxes each year based on those changes and changes in the laws, even temporary changes like we had under COVID. For this year, you don't have to take RMDs. For this year, you can fully deduct donations to charity. All these little one-offs that keep getting passed every now and then. All of that has to be communicated amongst, if you do it yourselfers, amongst yourself. You're going to be the tax guy, the investment guy, and the planning guy. So make sure you're taking all those into consideration. If you're using multiple professionals, make sure all of them are talking, or utilize a firm like ours where all that is in-house and we're monitoring it. So once even we get the data from Chris, it doesn't mean your positions are never going to change. They're going to. So initially, we base it on assumptive data. Is that assumptive a word? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Sure.
Oh, cool. So we base it on assumptive data that you're going to provide to us. We're going to get you on the bullseye. We're going to get you on the target, not necessarily the bullseye. Then it goes upstairs. Chris starts to drill into it with his team, gets us closer to the bullseye, maybe even on it. But a hunter, you'll know. You can go to the range one day with your firearm, with your rifle, and range it in. You're thinking, hey, it's in perfect. And then you go with a new box of bullets from the same manufacturer but a different lot, and it's going to be off a little. And you're like, damn, I thought I had it perfect. I got to change it a little. That's the same thing with retirement planning. Bad analogy, but you get the point, folks. It's constantly changing. So the plan is the ongoing monitoring and maintenance and integration of your taxes, your investments, and your retirement. So even if you're a new client coming on and you can't go upstairs yet to Chris, we're going to get you on the target. He'll get you on the bullseye. But like a new box of bullets, we got to keep working and monitoring them constantly and changing. Mm-hmm. Anyways, anything you want to add? Because you do the upstairs work.
No, that is true. And it's most people that contact us do have some idea of their situation, so they can get us enough info if they're bringing assets over before going through the full-blown retirement planning process to get you close to the you know, get on the target, if you will, like you mentioned. I think that's a good analogy. You probably lost a few people on the new box of rounds and the temperature differences and the humidity and all the things that can affect your sights.
Well, I said if you're a hunter, you'll understand it. But so, yeah. For those who don't shoot, literally, folks, you can buy a round of ammunition from the same manufacturer in the same looking box. But if the lot numbers are different, those bullets will not perform the same as the previous ones. That's why when I get my rifle set in, I keep that one box of ammo. And I will shoot that whole box of ammo until it's gone. And I'm not saying I'm a phenomenal shot, but I am pretty good at harvesting my animals. And a 20-round box will last me 15 to 20 years. So I can keep those rounds for a very long time. Now, hopefully I don't bang the firearm and ruin my scope enough where I feel, oh, goodness, it's time to get a new box and start over again. But that's a whole other story. Anyways, don't get me going on the hunting stuff. Okay. All right, here's one that definitely you can handle, or me, or both. Hi, Jim and Chris. Mm-hmm. You described positioning as the bridge between retirement plan and investments. You have previously described your key services as, and these are in my words, meaning his words, folks, not mine. These are in my words, a three-legged stool. And we never called it a three-legged stool, but he does. A three-legged stool, a retirement analysis, long-term tax analysis and plan. And I don't know if he means long-term care, meaning aging assistance and tax analysis, or a long-term tax analysis. I could take that either way because we do both. But he has long-term tax analysis and plan. And the third, asset management. These three, I would imagine, must be working all together. I know your recent podcasts were focusing only on your investment philosophy and fees. And in those podcasts, you made a great distinction between one-time and occasional services versus annual reoccurring fees. My question is this. Can you describe how your other key services fit in as well from a fee perspective? I'm just asking for a range overview of the services and fees for each, and more info on one-time, occasional, and annual reoccurring. I'm sure you could do another 3-5-part EDU series on this one question. You are correct, George, in New Jersey. We could do a series of podcasts, and we will. And before I let Chris talk a little, I just want to again say, right now, for those who don't know, I've said it before. You can Google and get what is called an ADV 2A. ADV dash 2 letter A. The ADV 2A is provided by every registered investment advisory firm out there. Now, it can get a little difficult if your investment advisor is working under a broker-dealer or is working under a, I call it, quote-unquote, corporate registered investment advisory firm, because you will get the corporate's ADV, and it'll be written, a corporate RIA might have thousands of IARs, investment advisor representatives, individuals who want to do financial planning, but they don't want to really run their own company to do it, their own RIA, their own registered investment advisory firm, because of all the headaches that, why I don't meet with clients anymore, Chris, I got to do all this other stuff to run the business now. So if you Google ADVs for some people, you're going to get even more confused, because you're going to get all their corporate one. And you're not going to know what the hell the fee structure is, because it's written to represent thousands of different advisors and what they charge. But if you are working with a firm such as ours, which is a owned RIA, it doesn't have to be a small RIA like Chris and I. It can be a massive one like Ken Fisher's, or who's the other guy we talk about a lot who just recently retired from his business there? The guy on the radio. What's his name? The one who believes you should have a mortgage for the rest of your life. What the hell's his name?
Oh, yeah. That's...
I have an excuse. I got a debt spot in my head. What's yours?
Well, I can't ever follow exactly where you're going with a lot of these things.
The guy who... Once I hear his name, he's
yeah,
got...
Yeah, I know.
He had a radio... Edelman.
Yeah, Rick Edelman. Rick Edelman, yeah.
Goodness. Yeah. He was bought out by... what was it? Financial Profiles, wasn't it? Or something like that? Whatever. Massive company now. Mm-hmm. Edelman... Financial Services.
It used to be Financial Engines or whatever.
Financial Engines is what it is now. They're bought out by Financial Engines. Get his ADV or their ADV, even though it's a massive company, a thousand times bigger than Chris and I, they still have an ADV just for them, just like we do. So if you know a little bit about the firm you're thinking of, just Google their ADV. Just put, for me, Jim Saul and the Associates ADV 2A, and boom, up it'll pop. And then you can read, fees are all disclosed in Section 5. And you can see everything in Section 5 about what people charge. In the eyes of the SEC, a bureaucratic monstrosity, that's full disclosure. Just do that and you can get everything you need. So that's where you can find out fees for most people. Now, again, if your advisor's with a big RIA, it's not going to help you at all. You're going to have to ask them what their fees are. Right now, our ADV describes our current model, which is not going to be our model at some point next year. We right now are a la carte. You can purchase us. You can utilize by purchasing from us any segment of the services we offer that he mentioned. We're paused now, but you could have hired us for retirement planning. You could have hired us to do an aging assistance analysis with Greg, an advanced tax analysis with Bob. We a la carte them. We separated them all out and let people purchase what they wanted and what they felt they needed. Now, we're going to have a new model in the future. We're not going to get deep into it. So when Chris reviews with you some of these things, just understand what he's describing. It applies to us now, but it's not in the future. But if you read other people's ADV 2As, you can get a lot of this information on fees right in Section 5. And ADV is very long. If you want fees and nothing more, go to Section 5 of the ADV 2A, and you can learn about the fees they charge and the fees that you may not know you're paying. Disclosure is putting it in the ADV 2A, not necessarily telling you orally. Just keep that in mind. So you want to find out a lot, go to the ADV 2A. So he's asking, what do we charge? Do you think we should get into, because what we charge now isn't what we're going to be doing, and we're closed now. I mean,
he was just looking for a range of stuff. So maybe I can step in a little bit, and first I want to appreciate his kind of reuse of the three-legged stool, because the traditional three-legged stool, which no longer exists for most people, was this old concept that financial/retirement planning sat on this three-legged stool that was represented by Social Security, pension income, and then your invested assets. And you, for a successful plan, you would have these three legs. And the, you know, the visualization was, imagine how stable a three-legged stool is. It's very stable because of the physics involved. And those were the three. Well, now one of those legs has been chopped off. One of those legs has been chopped off for most people in the form of pensions. You know, most people don't have pensions anymore. And we all know how precarious a two-legged stool is. So I will say that the financial planning area or profession has been slowly rebuilding that third leg, in my opinion, because most people then have investments. They have Social Security or a pension, but not both. You know, there's exceptions, of course, government employees. But that third leg is really important for a whole bunch of people. And that's where planning can come in and add that stability back that the pension used to add to you. It's not a direct replacement, but it gives you more stability with that third leg. He's thrown, you know, a curveball here where he's got this new three-legged stool, which I kind of like in that describing specifically ongoing financial advice to improve or you know, kind of optimize, if you will, your retirement in the form of you've got assets to manage on one leg, you've got tax planning and aging assistance and some of those things on another leg, and then the retirement plan itself. They're not so distinct and separate like the old Social Security, pension, and investments really were. So I'm not sure three separate legs makes a ton of sense because the retirement plan is upon which everything else sits. So I'd rather look at the plan as the floor that the stool is sitting on. And then you've got, you know, these different pieces that all have to be coordinated within the plan. And I think it's becoming clearer and clearer to people to have a successful or optimized plan out there, unless you have more money than you know what to do with and you're not, you don't care about optimization because you can't possibly run out. There's certainly that crowd out there. There's also a crowd that is desperate because they just don't have, you know, many legs for the stool itself and they're trying to figure out a way to live on just Social Security. But for those in the middle where you've got resources, you've got these legs going on the stool, you got the, you know, the floor or the whole plan being built can help optimize all these pieces. And to do it effectively, you've got to look at all that stuff. So we're recognizing that and have for quite some time. We've just been doing it kind of hodgepodge through this a la carte system, which we became pretty clear few years ago that it just wasn't efficient and practical to do it that way. That's why we're retooling the firm in order to do exactly what he's talking about. Bring all these components together in kind of a comprehensive service moving forward. And I mean, to give an idea for some of these a la carte pieces that we were doing that are going to be, some are repetitive. They happen over and over again. Sometimes there's kind of a big plan and then a, you know, marginal updates down the road and things like that. So it's hard to put one number on everything, but for big, good comprehensive planning that looks at all the different pieces and gets things going, I think it's pretty easy to say that that's going to run for people, you know, the way we do it and the way we charge $3,000 to $5,000 for that, some of that kind of stuff. And then depending on what services you do after that, you might have recurring services during a particularly complicated time that could easily be that $3,000 to $5,000 or more, depending on what's going on. Other people with more simple situations might not have so many high level things that need to be done. That gives you a kind of a starting range. There's certainly people that find themselves above those numbers because they have a lot of stuff going on. But the nice thing, I think if you have been following us, we very clearly talk about the different phases of retirement. And even in the kind of the approach phase or that transitional phase as you get close to but haven't entered retirement yet, unlike how retirement is described in most mainstream financial planning, financial advising, and investment management focused firms, they talk about it like it's just this one thing and you're going to live retirement the same every year for the rest of your life. They don't get into any kind of detail recognizing there's things like the delay period, which is very different, the tax planning window that we talk about all the time that's going on, the fact that your lives hopefully will simplify as you age if you
take some of the steps that we encourage. In particular, others do too, but we really like simplification. And if you achieve that, you can get to a point where your ongoing needs or handholding or services that you might need to optimize your situation become pretty minimal, actually, down the road. But there's a period of a lot of chaos, honestly. The couple of years approaching retirement, a lot of decisions to be made. Once you enter retirement, you start freaking out, starting to take money out. You've entered the tax planning window. You got to pay attention to all this stuff. You got to figure out how to take up all the time you used to spend working. Are you going to actually pull the trigger on all your go-go spending now? There's just a lot of stuff going on, but that's not permanent. You're not doing those. That chaos doesn't exist when you're 75 or 80 for most people. That exists from retirement to about 72, 74, 75, somewhere in there for most people. So, you know, depending on when you pull the trigger on retirement, could be an extended period of time, could be a very short period of time of chaos, if you will. And it's during that chaos that the most critical decisions need to be made to keep you on track and to not make things, decide on things you might regret. That's a lot of the things about retirement planning or financial planning is trying to minimize your regrets. You know, minimize regretting sending too much money in taxes because you didn't do something proactively. Minimizing the regret of not traveling enough in your go-go period because you now don't have the opportunity to do so. You know, minimizing the regret of not planning for certain things. You're not going to get everything to behave. I mean, this is life. It's not going to be perfect. But if you can minimize the regrets that you have, I think that philosophy or approach goes a long way in, you know, eyeing your retirement in particular, since that's what we focus on here. So I got all those words out. Hopefully I tried to balance a little bit what Jim has done so far, but
I think you did good.
How'd that go?
It did well. Thank you. Very good. I'd love to do more, folks, but I actually have to be at a person's place very, very shortly to help Bob with something. So we're going to have to wrap up. We're going to have to wrap up today. There are several more questions that related to this. So we will put them in the regular Q&A rotation, if you will. I may try to, of course, do Chris's Social Security question, the new question of the week, and maybe I'll throw in one of these and then get into regular questions. I don't know. We'll see. But I appreciate everyone who sent questions in. I just don't want to do another EDU Q&A on this. It's kind of, we beat this horse to death, and we want to move on. So next week will be a different EDU show, and everyone else, keep sending your Q&As in, and we'll get to them on the regular Q&A show.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thanks, everybody, for listening through this whole series. Look forward to talking about something new next week. So stay tuned. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.